Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
The moon, yeah. That's Hugo, tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-o! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
And now, an ad from Dad.
All right. Save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off?
All right. What is this? This looks good.
Wow. That's well made.
Where did you get this? I'm talking to you with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Next time on This Week in Geek, Dave and the guys power up and go Super Saiyan. Who's going to win? Goku or This Week in Geek? Next time on Dragon Ball Z.
You're listening to Twig Fan Service, brought to you by ThisWeekInGeek.net and Anime on Request in St. Catharines, located at 314 Merritt Street, Niagara's largest anime store. And now, on with the show.
Hey guys, you're listening to This Week in Geek Fan Service, and today I have a very special interview with voice actor Kyle Hebert. He's done things like Dragon Ball Z, Naruto, Bleach, and a whole bunch of video games, and he's a really cool guy, and I think you'll like this interview. He was really awesome to talk to. He's also from a podcast as well that also talks about geeky stuff called The Big Bald Broadcast with his friend Otherworld Steve. So check that out as well. I've been listening to it, and it's also really enjoyable. Hopefully, you'll enjoy this one as well, so stay tuned. So, do you want to start the interview now?
Sure.
Cool. So, have you ever done any voice work in Canada?
I have not. I think there's, the whole work visa thing, and
that's true.
It's probably kind of uphill battle.
I was just wondering because it's where I live, and I thought it would be cool.
Oh yeah, I think it'd be cool too. I mean, Vancouver is actually the big hub for the voice work for this fairly small talent pool that gets to do all the video games, all the anime, and all the cartoon work. And they are, if you get in those doors, you're pretty much set. But I mean, to be fair, you really need to be Canadian. So
yeah. So you're living in LA now, is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
for the past 3 years.
Why did you decide to move to LA? Is there more work there, or did you just like it better there? Is there any particular reason?
It's definitely where the work is. And in voice acting, you kind of need to be where it is, especially for animation work. Nowadays, it's kind of a different thing with the internet, because people can do like commercial work and different types of projects like audiobooks, on-hold messages, corporate narration stuff. They can do that from home and be anywhere on the planet, literally. But for animation work, especially anime and cartoons, the directors like you there in person. So the bulk of the work is definitely in Los Angeles. I've done more video games than I have anime, actually.
Wow. So what was your favorite video game to work on?
Favorite video game to work on. I don't know. I just kind of enjoy the challenge of just going into a session completely cold, learning what the role is or roles. It's usually plural. I'm usually playing like 10 different soldiers or monsters and things. I did play the villain in a game that I can't announce yet, but what they did was videotape my session, and they used the video for the animators to kind of base the animation on, like my facial movements and expressions and everything. They didn't base the character visually. They just used the expressions and the movements of me in the booth to kind of help guide how the character would act and behave. But he looks nothing like me. But I thought that was pretty cool that they did that. That's like a step below being like motion capture or something, which I do know some voice actors who recently got to go to Japan to do that. They voiced on a game and they actually got to do the motion capture process for their characters.
Wow, that's pretty awesome.
Yes, indeed. And a trip to Japan on top of it, so.
Yes, going to Japan is always cool.
Yeah, I've never been. I've been to China a few times to record on some video games. I went to Shanghai twice this year, and that was a lot of fun. You know, I mean, a long flight, that part's not fun. But once you're there, I mean, Shanghai is a beautiful city with amazing architecture. And, of course, really good Chinese food. Who figured?
Well, you've been further than me. I haven't been much further than Buffalo, New York, so I've really got nothing to brag about. But
well,
that's definitely really cool.
I was in Buffalo, New York in the middle of a snowstorm. They flew me out and a con was about to happen on this university campus and they had to cancel because the blizzard came in. But we were already there, so we kind of had just like a private party, just kind of hung out with staffers and everything.
That's pretty awesome.
I'm not used to seeing so much snow. You know, living in L.A., it just does not snow here.
Yeah, Buffalo is pretty bad for that. Like, it's even worse than the northern side of Lake Erie. But anyways, I'm going off on a tangent. So, speaking of cons, have you done a lot of conventions? And what would you say is the weirdest or coolest convention story you have?
Well, I've been doing conventions since 2000. I went to ACON in Dallas, Texas as a fan in that year. And a few months after that, I got to audition at Funimation for Dragon Ball Z. Then fast forward to 2001 ACON, I got invited as a guest. So I've been doing steadily more and more conventions each year. And this year, I've done half dozen already, and I've got another half dozen lined up for the second half of the year. And some I have to turn down just because they're conflicting dates, or, you know, I've got my 12-year-old daughter living with me now, so I kind of have to bring her along and see how the con budget can, if they can handle two plane tickets, then rock and roll.
Well, it's a cool experience for her anyways.
Yeah, because her and I never really did much traveling before, and this is affording us that awesome opportunity to get to do that, see new places, and of course meet new people, and you know, see the sights and hang out, and of course, you know, just mingle with the fans, which really does mean a lot to me because I am a fan too.
We actually just got back from the Toronto Fan Expo, and that was really cool. So maybe
awesome.
In a couple of years we could see you there. I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
I hope so. I'm actually going up to Canada for a Manitoba convention that's kind of like that Toronto one, but that's in October.
It might be the same people putting it on. I'm not sure.
Maybe. I mean, it's kind of got the likes of like Lou Ferrigno, the original Hulk, and Jeremy Bullock, the original Boba Fett, and you know, people just, you know, celebrities from different genres. Kind of all coming together and doing signings and stuff.
That's cool. That's very similar to what we had. I didn't really get any signings because it was too expensive, but I got to stand back
yeah,
and look
that adds
at least.
Up. Yeah. And the anime folks, we kind of understand that fans aren't made of money, and we don't make much money, honestly, doing anime voice work. So we proudly do not charge fans for signatures.
Yes, that's always a good thing. The comic book artists and the anime people usually never charge, and that's always nice.
Yep. But it would have been nice to have met some Battlestar Galactica people that were there. I'm a Battlestar fan.
I've only seen the miniseries, but I gotta get caught up. I don't have a lot of time.
Yeah, I know. Time is a precious commodity. I picked up Heroes today, season 1 and 2 on Blu-ray. I've only seen the first 3 episodes from the first season. And I liked what I saw. I just never got around to seeing the rest. But I'm a big Blu-ray nut, so I like collecting those and enjoying high-def goodness.
It's a really cool show. I think you'll like it.
Oh, definitely. I definitely like what I've seen so far.
Cool. So, anyways, back to the whole voice acting thing. What made you decide to become a voice actor to begin with, and what obstacles did you have to overcome to break into the industry?
Well, learning as a kid that all the Looney Tunes cartoons were voiced by Mel Blanc, just one guy. You know, my dad told me that when I was, you know, probably 7, 8 years old, and that kind of stuck with me. And I said, you know, I want to do that. That seems really cool. So it's been a lifelong dream for me to do voiceover for animation. And I've also been a lifelong fan of anime as well. I would watch Speed Racer, Battle of the Planet, Star Blazers. I grew up in the 70s, and then I saw Robotech in the 80s, and, you know, Akira towards the end of the 80s, Vampire Hunter D. And, you know, the thing started building in popularity. It went from this whole phenomenon where it's just a few people watching third or fourth generation VHS copies of sometimes not even fan sub, just raw Japanese, to entire conventions based on the art form. And the struggle was definitely getting over shyness. I wanted to, you know, act crazy and do all these different voices and everything, but I was shy, so I never got involved in theater in school. I got involved in radio, which was another thing that I wanted to do. I wanted to be a DJ and do voices. So I ended up getting a degree in radio, TV, film in the University of North Texas, just outside of Dallas. And I got an internship with ABC Radio Networks, and I quickly learned that a lot of radio people also do voiceover. And I started kind of mingling and networking, and eventually heard about auditions at Funimation in the summer of 2000. And they were casting for Dragon Ball Z, which blew me away because not only were they local to me, but I was a fan of that show from 5 years previous, watching the Ocean Dub from Canada. You know, I used to go around the house imitating Scott McNeil's Piccolo and Doc Harris's narrator. And lo and behold, I became the narrator. And then I got Teen Gohan, which I didn't have to voice match because the Ocean Group at that point hadn't dubbed that far in the series. But getting into radio kind of broke me out of the shy shell. I was able to kind of overcome that and gain some confidence. And I've learned about mic technique, and it's kind of a different animal than being on stage. If you talk to different voice actors who come from theater, they'll quickly tell you it's a different beast altogether, where you can't rely on expressions or your eyes or projecting very loud so an audience can hear you. You're working with a microphone. It's very sensitive, so you have to play to the subtleties of that, and you're literally building a character from the ground up using just your voice. And that's a challenge that has always fascinated me, and I welcome it with open arms. And I've been very, very blessed with the opportunities that I've been given to do that for the past 8 years.
Wow, that's really cool. So you've kind of watched this whole thing evolve before you even stepped into it, pretty much.
Yeah, very much. I mean, I never thought, I mean, that I would be voicing video games. You know, I grew up, you know, I had the Atari 2600 back in the day, and then ColecoVision and Super Nintendo. And then through the years, you know, I never really envisioned hearing my voice on video games. And now I'm, you know, on tons of RPGs and obviously the Naruto games, the Bleach games, Dragon Ball Z games. And the biggest kick I get myself as a fan is getting to select my own character and playing that. That's something that not everyone can do. And that's the biggest rush for me. It's not even hearing my voice on the shows or hearing it on TV anymore. It's like getting to select my character in a game and playing as that character.
That is pretty cool. So your life actually sounds a lot like mine, because I'm in the radio, TV, and film course as well, and I also have a podcast, so it's kind of weird. It's like talking to a older version of myself.
Oh, yeah. No, seriously, podcasting, when it started coming out a few years ago, it really kind of reinvigorated my love of radio, because I was kind of burned out. I worked in radio for over a decade, and it was just kind of stagnant for me. I really just kind of made a decision that I needed to pick up and move away from Dallas, which was very limited. Funimation gave me work, but it wasn't enough to live on or certainly call a career. So I kind of just accepted the risk and You know, I was yet another of one of thousands of people that, you know, have a dream and want to come to Los Angeles and make a name for themselves and carve a little niche and make a living. And I forfeited my full-time radio job, gave up insurance benefits and everything to come out here to try to make it work. And luckily, you know, through some precious contacts in the industry, who were able to pass my demo around and everything, I was able to secure work and build working relationships with them. So suddenly my name got spread around to other people, and it just kind of became a domino effect to where this year things kind of kicked in and I really started living just on voice work alone, which is the goal. It's not consistent, unfortunately. It never will be. It's a roller coaster. You know, I can go through a week where nobody calls, or I could have three or four things to do in 1 week. And again, video games pay so much more than anime, so my ears perk up more when it's a game project. You know, you make $700-$800 as opposed to $64 or $65 an hour for anime dubbing.
Johnny got a toy golf set when he was three, and from that day on, he was hooked. All he wanted to do was golf, golf, golf. He'd be on the links before school, after school. All he ever wanted was to go pro. And then, one day, when he was holding his grandson and thinking about his 12 handicap, Johnny realized it just might not happen for him. But you know what did happen for him? He switched to Geico and saved a bunch of money on car insurance. So that was good, and so was hanging out with his grandson.
You shouldn't go to Barnes & Noble and buy 10,000 books just so you can build a book fortress and yell out, "I am your book leader." You shouldn't buy 147 copies of War and Peace, stuff them inside turkeys, and serve them at Thanksgiving as turbookins. And you definitely shouldn't buy up all the copies of Dork Diaries, causing the neighborhood kids to stage a protest in your front yard. But you could, because at the Barnes & Noble Book Haul, you can get over 1,000 titles for 50% off. Stock up at your local Barnes & Noble. Turbookins are fictitious and should not be cooked at home.
So, I read somewhere that you worked for Radio Disney for a while.
For 9 years.
Wow, what was that all like?
That was really interesting because I came from a heavy metal rock format at ABC Radio Networks. I was literally screaming at the top of my lungs, doing wacky voices, just being a DJ. And I was kind of getting to live out my fantasy of doing these cartoon voices on the radio, kind of a theater of the mind thing. And unfortunately, the ratings were starting to slip on the rock format. They were going off the air. But Disney, which owns ABC, was creating this new children's radio format to syndicate nationwide to the United States. And the boss had heard me on the air on the rock station and thought that I would be a good fit because of the cartoon voices and the silliness I was doing. I was kind of doing a mesh between like Jim Carrey and Robin Williams, but, you know, introducing Metallica and stuff and just playing wacky sound effects and pretending I was on a spaceship or whatever. And they thought that, oh, this is perfectly geared towards kids. So I got to literally go from one playground to another and just have a blast. And I did that for, 9 years. And I made the conscious decision to leave by a certain point and come out to Los Angeles and make the crossover into voice work full time and to kind of get out of the doldrums, which radio, unfortunately, kind of it plateaued for me. I was still having a fun time on the radio, but I wasn't really going anywhere. I didn't feel the progression. I wanted to transition because I guess I'd gotten the radio part out of my system, and I really wanted to just latch onto voiceover and start getting onto cartoons. And I certainly couldn't do that in Dallas because cartoons aren't voiced there. They're voiced in LA. So I knew I had to pack up and make the big move, take the big risk and everything. But working for the Disney company was actually a blessing. It led to more connections in the industry. I had an absolute blast on the air. And there you go. In a nutshell.
Were you ever able to audition for a Disney part for one of their cartoons or anything?
Sadly, no. However, since I moved to Los Angeles and I was able to secure an agent, again, through a network contacts, I've read for numerous Disney cartoons and Nickelodeon cartoons and different projects, and nothing has really stuck just yet, but You know, I'm faithful. It's just a matter of time. The agent is quick to say that, you know, it takes, you know, 10 years to be an overnight success. It is a very competitive field. So you've got, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of people reading for the same role. And people doing character voice, they're a dime a dozen. So how do you really differentiate yourself? That's the big, I don't really know. It's kind of a rhetorical thing because every casting director has in their mind what they're looking for, and they don't necessarily know how to phrase it, so they'll put things in the audition scripts that they're just reaching. They're latching onto some sort of buzzword that they think they understand what they're looking for, but voice actors have to sometimes take risks and go against type and read something unique and different that wasn't asked for in the audition, and sometimes that lands the role.
Is there any way that you can prepare for an audition? Do you actually, if it's an anime, for example, do you go and watch the original Japanese first, or do you just kind of walk in and do your thing?
Well, there's really no time in an audition process. You show up maybe 15 minutes ahead of time, so you have ample time to kind of look over the script, which is maybe a few lines, maybe five or six lines showing a range of emotion. If you're lucky, it'll have a picture of the character, a little bit about the character. And then you go into the booth and maybe learn a little bit more about the plot and how that character fits into the story. With anime, the auditions are purely just recording your voice. But once you're cast, then as you're dubbing the show, you will get to preview each line of dialogue in Japanese first. So, you can understand the context of it, so we're not, you know, screaming the top of our lungs or whatnot. That's kind of the nice advantage of doing anime dubbing. You see the finished product before your eyes, and in a cartoon situation, you're recording audio first, and you don't have any reference. Maybe the animator may have a rough pencil sketch, and that's all. So that's kind of the difference there. But another perk with doing cartoons is you get to record with the whole cast and kind of play off each other's performance. In anime dubbing, you have to record individually because there's such attention paid to lip sync that it's just kind of a waste of time and actors' time and money to have everyone just sitting around while one person's in the booth trying to, you know, lip sync their parts and everything.
So how would you see the anime industry evolving in the future from how it's gone till now?
It's definitely come to a head where you've got, you know, Geneon imploded. You've got ADV, which is seemingly on its last legs, and Funimation has kind of swept in and kind of taken over distribution for many of their titles. I think downloading fan subs are a huge part of what's contributing to the problem of low DVD sales. Fans want the shows not out of maliciousness. They just want it. They want it as soon as it airs in Japan. And the problem is they've already seen the show, so they've lost the desire to invest any money in purchasing the DVD because they've already seen it for free. So you find a lot fewer people who are willing to go ahead and fork over some money to actually purchase the DVD so they can put money back into the system to make sure that the creators can keep the product flowing. So with the advent of the internet, obviously fan subs are able to get in HD quality like instantly, like within a day or so of it being broadcast in Japan. And I think the studios in Japan have to kind of embrace that this is the internet age, and you can't wait for a year or two to put out a show on DVD anymore. You almost have to just address this on-demand audience and at least put an official subtitled version online as fast as possible, because there is always that differentiating quality in fan subs. If you want something official from the studio that made it and have it stream maybe with ad support or something so that the studio is still generating money and it's a good compromise for the fans, they can get the shows as quick as they're aired. You know, Gonzo in Japan definitely has the right idea. They're starting to stream stuff the same day or the same week that it airs in Japan. Funimation now has a YouTube channel where you can watch many of their shows for free on YouTube officially. And I think as long as studios, Japanese and American, kind of work together and just embrace the internet age, that will help save this niche industry from totally self-imploding. The internet and the entertainment industry as a whole is suffering because of, you know, BitTorrents and pirating and bootlegging and everything. But the anime industry is especially hurt because it is such a niche market. It's such a minuscule part of the entertainment industry overall. I mean, sure, there's tons and tons of anime cons and there's lots of fans everywhere, but if you put it next to the number of general movie fans or TV fans or that sort of thing, it makes up just, you know, I don't even know a percentage, but I know it's pretty small. From everything I'm reading, I just know that it's very niche.
What advice would you give to someone wanting to break into the voice acting industry?
I get asked this all the time, and I want to stress to people that want to do voice acting that it's not about doing voices. It's not about doing impressions. You definitely have to have an acting background of some sort. Get some structure. Build your skills. Wherever you are, if you're not where the work is, such as Los Angeles or New York or Vancouver or Houston for ADV or Dallas for Funimation, if you're not in any of those cities, I strongly suggest just getting involved in your local theater program, or if there's a student radio station, taking some voiceover classes maybe. Everything is a Google search away. If you're able to move where the work is, that will obviously help you more if you want to get into animation voiceover and video game voiceover specifically. This is something that you can't do just from anywhere. You have to live where that work is. Again, Los Angeles, Vancouver. There's work in New York and in Texas. But beyond that, you're really kind of stuck with you're kind of limited with the number of types of projects you can do with a home setup. It's becoming easier and cheaper to do that. You can walk into a guitar center or any sort of instrument store and buy a USB mic, a pretty decent one for under, $100 or $200. And get some basic editing software and have a decent sounding setup. But again, for animation, the directors want you there in person, and they want to see your face and they want to be able to direct you. And then that leads to more work, theoretically anyway.
Of all the work you've done with DJing and anime voiceover and video game voiceover, what would you say is the most enjoyable to do for you personally?
I get a kick out of, I just love doing just anything, really. I know it sounds like a cop-out, but, there's perks to doing anime. You see the finished product then and there. The perk to doing video games is it pays so much more, and it's easier because there's no lip sync involved. I love that. I love the ability to just walk in and say, okay, today I'm going to play a soldier, an ogre, a demon, a dragon, and the villain and a hero. It's like not every job is like that, getting to just go in and kind of build something from the ground up and work that symbiotic relationship with the director and the game producer or anime producer and bring something to a bigger mainstream audience. I just get a huge kick. It's always an exciting new challenge every time I step in the booth, and that's what keeps me motivated and just continues to inspire me to do this. I just love this. I tell people that it's important to do what you love in life, not what makes you money. Of course, money is important, but it's not everything. I mean, how miserable would you be if you're making millions of dollars, but you're not happy doing what you're doing? If you're bored to tears, what good does it do? So find your passion in life, no matter what it is, and follow it. Take steps to achieve your goals. And, I'm not going to say it will happen for every single person, but determination and passion are a huge, huge part. And commitment, I mean, 110%. This is something you can't go into kind of half-cocked. You have to really, really want it and accept that getting into a profession such as voice acting is something that does not happen overnight. It doesn't come fast or cheap or easy. It's going to take years. If you accept that and you have a thick skin and you accept that you're going to audition for dozens of projects and not get a call back, that's just the cold, hard truth. That makes getting the one call back all the sweeter. So just take all that to heart.
All right, cool. I have kind of an obscure question here. I went to your IMDb page, and it said you were an extra in Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End. Can you tell me what scene you're in so I can, like, look for you in the background or something? I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah, here's the depressing part. They did shoot a shot or two where I could be seen. It's the opening scene where all of these pirates are being marched to the gallows. And I shot for 2 days, two 12-hour days, very long, and 90% just sitting around. Being an extra on a movie set is not fun. I did not see any of the main cast because they weren't in that scene. I did see the director, and that was cool because I'm a big movie buff, and I appreciate it. I'm a fan of the Pirates movies. So when I got a call, and I got the gig just because I signed up to be a part of an extras casting service here in Los Angeles, and they actually called me. I guess they looked at my picture in their database saying, "You look like a pirate. Come to this casting call in Burbank because the third Pirates movie needs pirates." It's like, oh, cool. Neat. So I ended up making like $400 for 2 days' work. But unfortunately I've gone through the final product with a fine tooth comb. I went through the Blu-ray disc and I could not see me anywhere.
Well, that's what happens in editing, I guess. Not everything makes it in.
But there is a shot that if the shot continued, you would see my feet. Like the scene opens with showing a slow motion shot of shackled feet. And, the camera was like, one person behind me. So I'm thinking if that shot were a little bit longer, as the camera pans across the feet, you would have at least seen my feet. And not that anyone would know it's my feet, but I would. And I probably would have put a screen cap up on my MySpace page or something saying, look, it's my feet.
If only the movie was 2 hours and 51 minutes instead of 2 hours and 50, we could have seen Kyle Abird's feet. It would have been awesome.
Exactly. I do have a little bit of a bug at the back of me kind of saying, you know, you need to do more on camera. But it's so much harder to get into. It's even more competitive than voice work. You've got a million people, a million actors in Los Angeles, and they're all waiters, or they're all, you know, they're all waiting for their big break and everything. And I don't have an agent for on-camera work, so that would be a definite uphill battle for me. Maybe I might try and pursue on-camera commercial and kind of segue into it at some point. But the great part about voice acting is it doesn't matter what you look like. You don't have any makeup or wardrobe. There's no 12-hour days. You just show up at the studio, do your work, which could take an hour or two, maybe 15 minutes sometimes, maybe 4 hours most, and then you go home. And you make your money. You get your check, you know, a few weeks later, and life is good. And if you get enough of those gigs, you can actually make a living at this.
Cool. So I guess that's about it. Thanks so much for letting me do this and letting me talk to you.
Oh, certainly.
That was awesome.
Yeah, no prop.
Wanna see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show. So don't miss it.
Capitalism! Freaking capitalism!
Where's our cut?
The Birdman has lost his mind. Stay tuned next week when he evidently doesn't find it again.
See, the moose are extinct. We shot the last one. That's all Urban Legend.
Stay tuned next week for Electric Boogaloo. Coming up next.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week when you hear Mike say...
And don't forget to spay or neuter your pet, noob.
So make sure to tune in next week on 90.1 FM, The Heat, Niagara's new rock. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net for more geek content, as well as subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment about this week's episode, head to our forums at thisweekingeek.net/forums. We'll see you next week, and remember...
Lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to Nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Geico presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi! So, about the kitchen. Turns out, when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here, and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.